Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to our podcast, The Greek Current, for your daily roundup, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HALC staff. Expert Alan Makovsky joins us today from Washington, D.C. to discuss a recent report by the Center for American Progress titled The First 100 Days Toward a More Sustainable and Values-Based National Security Approach. The report recommends that a future U.S. administration needs to recalibrate its relations with Turkey. We'll talk about what that means, and we'll also look at the link between Turkey's increasingly aggressive foreign policy and its democratic backsliding. Alan Makovsky is a senior fellow for national security and international policy at the Center for American Progress and has worked on Turkey and the Middle East in several capacities, including as a senior staff member on the Committee on Foreign Affairs in the House of Representatives and at the State Department. Alan, welcome to the Greek Current podcast.
Thank you, Thanos. Great to be here. I'm a big fan and consume your product every day.
Great to hear. So, Alan, the Center for American Progress recently published a report titled The First 100 Days Toward a More Sustainable and Values-Based National Security Approach. The section on recalibrating U.S. global relationships also includes a section focusing on Turkey. Now, the report is clear that the next administration should work to actively deleverage itself from its relationship with Turkey, especially on security matters, and the top recommendation is the reevaluation of the U.S.-Turkey relationship. What conclusion do you think such a reevaluation would lead us to?
Well, I think that some of the problems that have plagued U.S.-Turkish relations over the past several years go beyond our issues with Turkey and are really problems in U.S. foreign policy in general. First of all, I'd like to see human rights become an element once again in U.S. foreign policy. NATO is supposed to be an alliance of democracies. Turkey clearly not only doesn't measure up, but it's steadily deteriorating as a democracy, and the U.S. isn't saying anything. We have to be realistic. I am not saying that we should only deal with perfect democracies. That's not the case. That's impossible. But we do have to be true to our values. And beyond being true to our values and beyond bolstering the morale of this sizable number of Turks who still strongly embrace democratic culture, it's also diplomatically an effective tool to have in your toolbox. Second of all, I think we really have to show more leadership, particularly in the Eastern Med. The U.S. has too often been absent. I think we've seen it during the recent crisis over the Oruç Reis and Castellorizo. We've seen it in Libya. We've seen it elsewhere. And I think if the U.S. were more involved in these issues, many of the crises would not eventuate to start with. So leadership is, again, something that goes beyond Turkey, but would certainly help to ameliorate some of our problems with Turkey. Thirdly, and this one is Turkey specific, I think the U.S. has to find some way to reestablish its leverage over Turkey. In the 30 plus years that I've been working on Turkey at the State Department, at the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and in the think tank world, I think the biggest change that I have observed is that Turkey, and not just the government, but the people themselves, if one is to believe the polls, have come to believe that the United States needs Turkey more than Turkey needs the United States. And that's a very unhealthy situation. And it makes it very difficult for us to exert leadership and exert leverage over Turkey. So I think we have to find a way to reestablish it. So, okay, easier said than done, perhaps.
What steps do you think that we can take to reestablish this leverage?
One thing I think we really need to do is to follow through when there's a threat. I think it was a big mistake following the case of the conviction of the Halk Bank executive that OFAC did not hand down a fine for Halk Bank for circumventing Iran sanctions. CATA has not been implemented. President Trump just ignored it. I'm not saying that he had to pick the most severe sanctions, but I think we needed to do something to show that when the United States makes a threat, it follows through on it. And look, Turkey is economically vulnerable. I don't want to punish the Turkish people if it's avoidable, but when its own government creates the problem, I think sometimes we need to do that. And just to illustrate how that works, Trump did impose sanctions over the Pastor Brunson affair, and the Turks came around. And I think it's been a mistake that we make threats and we don't follow through. Look, regarding northeast Syria, Erdogan kept saying, I'm going to send troops in, I'm going to invade. The U.S. Secretary of Defense said on three different occasions it would be unacceptable for Turkey to go in. But when President Erdogan spoke to Trump on the phone, he went in. Trump should have been able to make clear to him that the word of our Secretary of Defense has to be taken as gold. Every time we say something and then don't mean it, it increases Turkey's leverage, not ours. Now, ideally, we should be in a situation where we're all on the same page, but unfortunately, Turkey has taken a major departure from its traditional foreign policy, and it has struck off on a very independent foreign policy. So the U.S. really does have to think about this issue of leverage. Otherwise, its interests will be steadily undermined by independent Turkish foreign policy decisions.
Alan, this week in an event hosted by PAMED, the Project on Middle East Democracy, you made it clear that you do not advocate pushing Turkey away from the West, but rather that we should be reeling them back in. There's a narrative that was recently part of a debate on Twitter, I don't know if you caught it, with Soner Kajaptay and our executive director, Andy Zemanidis, that Turkey has become a rogue player because the West did not give it enough. For example, EU membership. Whereas the counter to that was that the West wasn't tough enough on Turkey. How do you think Turkey has been quote-unquote lost?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't accept that it's been lost. Maybe I'm naive. One thing that encourages me when reviewing polls of the Turkish public is that while there is a great deal of sympathy for the idea of Turkey showing regional leadership, there is not necessarily support for Erdogan's means. If you look at questions like, do you support establishing overseas bases? Do you support cross-border action? Should we be concerned that we're isolated in the region? You see that the public is frequently very split about these issues. And the one on isolation, which was a very recent poll, even half of AKP voters and two-thirds of the Turkish public overall expressed concern that Turkey was isolated. So I don't feel that it's irretrievably lost. It is still in NATO. And what I think has happened is that the administration is not, and it's not just this administration, it started earlier, has not exerted sufficient leverage. Look, I don't want to circumvent your question. Was it that the EU didn't bring Turkey in, or was it that the U.S. wasn't tough enough? I think in a way it's a false choice because, yes, I think had the EU taken Turkey in as a member, I think it could have made a major difference. The problem is that Turkey didn't qualify as a member of the EU, and it's too much to ask the EU to have taken in a member, particularly one the size of Turkey, that didn't meet the criteria. On the other hand, as I said, I think the U.S. needs to follow through when it draws a line in the sand, as it did, for example, with CATSA. It was a congressional line, but it was still the law of the land, or as Esper did regarding the idea of Turkey invading northeast Syria. I think the U.S. has to do what's necessary to follow through. So if you want to call that not being tough enough, sure, maybe I lean more in that direction. But look, it's a tough line to walk. I've been in government. I know it's always easier from the outside to say what should be done than to implement, because you do have to walk a fine line. I don't want to see us, if at all avoidable, cut the tie with Turkey, because I think the relationship with the U.S. still is somewhat of a restraint on Turkey. At least if we have that relationship, we have a better chance of being a force for restraint. As I said, in response to your first question, I think one of the big problems has been that the U.S. just hasn't shown sufficient leadership. Part of showing leadership is anticipating crises and working on them before they happen. And if they do happen, then knocking heads to make sure that they don't devolve into hostilities. That's where I think the U.S. has really fallen down. I think that if the U.S. had shown proper leadership on Libya, for example, I don't think there would have been a Turkish-Libyan agreement on the EEC. If ties were cut, I think it would really be bad for regional stability. I would really mean a Turkey that's unhinged. It would be bad for all of Turkey's neighbors, including Greece, but not only Greece.
I think everyone agrees in the region, too, that a democratic and Western-oriented Turkey is the Turkey that they want to see. Now, the event that we mentioned earlier, the PAMET event, it also focused on Turkey's foreign policy and its democratic demise. So I kind of want to talk a little bit about Turkey's democracy right now. There's a link that you discussed in that event between Turkey's growing authoritarianism and its increasingly militarized foreign policy. Today, we're seeing the effects of that militarization from Nagorno-Karabakh to the Eastern Mediterranean to Libya. How are the two linked? And what does it mean for the region as Turkey's President Erdogan becomes more and more authoritarian?
I think the major link is that Turks simply don't have the space politically to discuss Erdogan's foreign policy and to criticize it to the extent that polls suggest that such criticism exists. Erdogan dominates the media, and he dominates all the institutions. And it's very hard to express any criticism of what he does. And beyond that, by the way, he also dominates the judiciary. And so people who do criticize and whom he perceives as threats, of course, you do hear some voices of criticism. He does allow some of that. But once he perceives a threat, then you're very likely to be at best accused of insulting the president, which might just be a minor annoyance and a court date. Maybe you'll even be acquitted. And at worst, being accused of being a terrorist. So, you know, I mean, we have the outstanding example right now of Osman Kavala, who is a liberal and a gentleman I've met on three occasions, who comes across as just the nicest, gentlest person. I mean, the last person you could imagine being involved in violence, and yet he's accused of having plotted a coup. It's unfathomable. He was basically an independent liberal who was a man of means, didn't depend on the state for his living, and promoted liberal causes like Kurdish rights, LGBT rights, things that are anathema to the Erdogan worldview. And, you know, he has ended up in this horrible situation in prison, even though he was acquitted in one case, and before he even left jail, they came up with another charge. I don't mean to detain us too much on the Kavala case. My point is that Kavala has gotten a lot of publicity, but there are thousands of people like Kavala in Turkey, and of course, in most of the recent years, it's been cited as the leading jailer of journalists. And when you look at rankings of press freedom, Turkey sadly ranks very far down the list with third world countries below Russia. Freedom House has for now a number of years declared Turkey is not free. So that is, to me, the biggest connection between autocracy and a foreign policy. There are some foreign policies that Erdogan pursues that probably are popular. In general, people rally around the flag when it comes to Aegean issues. That is true. But when you ask people in polls, how should we settle our problems with Greece, diplomacy or military, overwhelmingly it's diplomacy. If you ask people, is it worth risking a crisis if it's going to harm our economy, overwhelmingly people say that it's not worth risking a crisis. Those are the kinds of views that don't come through in the Turkish media. So if I had to boil it down to one phrase, the connection between autocracy and aggressive foreign policy, it's lack of freedom of expression.
Alan, thanks for joining us, and thanks for the great conversation and insight. We look forward to having you back on The Greek Current.
I'd be honored. Thank you very much.
In other news, President Erdogan on Friday confirmed Turkey had tested its Russian-made S-400 missile defense system, despite objections from the United States. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Turkey had every right to test its equipment. They were tested, they're being tested, he announced. America's stance is absolutely not binding for us, he said. The Pentagon warned Turkey of serious consequences and condemned Turkey's test of the S-400s in the strongest possible terms. Turkey faces sanctions under a 2017 U.S. law known as CATSA, which mandates sanctions for any significant purchases of weapons from Russia. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met separately in Washington with the foreign ministers of both Armenia and Azerbaijan on Friday in a bid to promote a ceasefire in hostilities currently underway in Nagorno-Karabakh. Friday's meetings followed failed Russian-led attempts to broker a truce and lower-profile U.S. intervention to promote an end to the fighting. Secretary Pompeo emphasized the need to end the violence and protect civilians, and called on both sides to implement a ceasefire and return to substantive negotiations. Heavy fighting continued even as discussions in Washington were taking place. In the meantime, Turkey has thrown its weight behind Azerbaijan, vowing to support its longtime ally on the battlefield or the negotiating table. That wraps up today's Daily Roundup. Thanks for tuning in.